from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Odyssey celebrates the back-to-school season, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Hey, fantasy football owners, anybody can tell you what a good fantasy quarterback looks like, but it's the receivers that make or break your team. I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive in the position that matters most, wide receivers. From the route trees to who plays better in man or zone, we provide the insights you need to draft the best wide receivers. As you prep for your draft, let us give you the coverage you need. Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
All right, welcome in, everybody. How are you on this Thursday? We got a good Sports Daily coming your way. Jacob Albrecht, Tommy Kester with you on KFH, on 12 News Connected, all the different ways you take in the show. We're happy to be here with you no matter how that is. We can take your calls on the IHOP hotline, 869-1240. We can take your comments on Facebook and on YouTube. You can tweet at us on X, or X at us on X, I guess. You can get in touch with us lots of different ways. Tommy and I will be here for Jad Chambers producing, manning that IHOP hotline. Coming up on the program today on the IHOP hotline, WWE superstar Chad Gable will join the program to look ahead to a WWE event coming to Intrust Bank Arena. We also have our K-State insider Tim Fitzgerald hopping on the program as well. Tommy, how are you this morning?
Man, I'm good. Glad to be here today. Looking forward to jumping right into it. Busy day. A couple interviews, like you mentioned. We'll talk Royals. We'll talk TBT. A lot to get into on the show. Glad to be here.
Yeah, it'll be fun. And even though we have a couple of not fun things to talk about, Mass Street kind of blew it last night a little bit. They had a big lead going into the Elam ending and then just ran out of gas a little bit against Team Colorado. So no more local teams out of the TBT happening. We also have the Royals blowing it. James MacArthur specifically took a lead into the ninth inning, and he couldn't finish things off. And, you know, despite a couple of runs there in the ninth from the Royals side, it wasn't enough. And that was a little bit of a gut punch there heading into the only day off they'll see now until like August 11th. So that's a tough one as well. But, you know, you get both of those things happening. And it kind of ruins the night for you a little bit. But here we go. We'll talk about it. We'll get into the Royals, what it means, what it did to the standings. Did you watch any of the TBT game last night? I got about halfway through the third quarter. I was able to get in there. And, you know, it looked like, I know Mass Street struggled early, and then it looked like they took control. And that's kind of what Team Colorado's done to all three of the local teams. Now they're the bad guys here, and they get it done. And that's it for the TBT. But it was, I will say, it was a really cool and impressive crowd last night.
Yeah, it wasn't. You know, Colorado entered the tournament as the 5 seed, and they just rolled through the Wichita Regional. And really, I think the biggest thing in the game last night for them was the way they jumped out to the lead early on. And I know that Mass Street, they kind of took control midway through, got back into it. You know, they took the lead and all of that. But really, Colorado established themselves really early on and, you know, showed that they belonged in that regional final. And then it's really been the Elam ending for them. They played extremely well in that Elam ending, not only last night, but then if you go back to the game against the Aftershocks, played really well, and that, of course, hit the game-winning shot, you know, to take down the Aftershocks. They did that, you know, of course, last night too. But, you know, showed that poise, showed that ability to close out both of those games, get that done, all three of them for that fact. And so they, you know, I think are absolutely, you know, deserving of moving on and moving out of the Wichita Regional. I don't know what the other regionals look like and what the representatives of the other regionals, you know, how great those teams are. I'm sure they're all extremely worthy adversaries of Team Colorado. But man, after watching what that team has done in Wichita over the last week, I think that they're going to be a force to be reckoned with as things move on in that tournament. It is obviously disappointing that there's not a local flavor moving on out of the Wichita Regional, but it's been impressive to watch what Team Colorado has done.
Yeah, it's too bad. I was really hoping we would get one through. I was glad to see Mass Street have a big crowd. They did. They ran out of gas if you watched the game. They couldn't. They just were tired. I think they had a couple guys banged up. They were just desperately heaving, trying to get a 3 to fall to make it through and couldn't get it done. So they don't, and that's it. And Colorado's there, and we move on with our lives. All right, so let's talk about the Royals, Tommy. That sucks because that's a game you had in the bag, and that's, you know, there's nothing worse than blowing leads late and blowing a save. James MacArthur has a 5.03 ERA after last night, and it's not like it all came from last night. I think he you know, he's got a lot of saves and all that stuff, but I just it's, you know, that and look, he had only, and I get it, and I don't think it's time to like move him out of the spot necessarily, but he has not been that good this year. But it's weird, right? Because when it's bad, it's really bad. And otherwise it's been okay. And he had that stretch, but you know, if you go back to June 13th, it was something like 11 out of 12 appearances were clean innings, right? As far as runs go. And then you had last night, one game, he gave up a run, but, and then you had last night and he gave up 5. The problem is there's always traffic with him, right? There's always base runners, it feels like, whether it's a hit or a walk, like completely clean innings don't feel all that frequent. And I don't think it's time to pull him from that role, but he's not like lights out or anything like that. And I don't know that there would be anybody better, but I do think they could look at it a little bit if, again, the trade deadline's close and, you know, maybe they are aggressive and maybe there's closer type out there that could slot into that role. But I mean, do you feel confident with MacArthur running out there even before last night? Cause I've not felt that way for a while. I mean, he's gotten the job done pretty well, and it may not totally be fair, but usually when you see closers, they're not up there with whips nearing 1.5 and ERAs up above 4.75. Like he plays with fire a lot, I guess is my point.
I think you have to be fair to James MacArthur a little bit because, you know, when the season started, he was not slated to be the closer by all accounts. Maybe internally he was, but that wasn't the conversation going into the season. I don't think it was. At least that's not anything I remember the conversation being. It was, you know, these different acquisitions that had been brought in. I think that there were larger plans and larger expectations for guys like Will Smith and Nick Anderson, who is no longer with the team, by the way, and Chris Stratton and other players like that, to maybe, and I don't want to suggest that it was always going to be a closer by committee type situation, but it certainly wasn't a James MacArthur always in the ninth closer type situation, I don't believe, at the start of the season. Almost by necessity, early on, he came into that role, and there was a flash of time where he was pretty locked down. A short period of time, but it was there. I remember it, where he kind of captured everybody, and it was like pretty fun to watch. Now, he did play with fire almost all the time, but it was pretty locked down. But then you quickly realized, okay, like, yeah, he's kind of out of his league a little bit in these high leverage situations. Doesn't mean that he doesn't have electric stuff, you know, doesn't mean that he can't be, you know, a quality reliever in the Royals bullpen. But being a consistent and constant closer for the Royals, at least right now in this stage in his career, is probably not in the cards. And I think that that was confirmed when the Royals acquired Hunter Harvey. Hunter Harvey is, I think, their closer of the future. I think he is. I think that's why they acquired him. I think that's why Hunter Harvey pitched the eighth inning last night. I think they are getting Hunter Harvey acclimated in late inning situations. That was a one-run ball game when Hunter Harvey took the hill. And he pitched.
I mean, he hasn't pitched a scoreless. He just hasn't been inning. A whole lot better. Is the problem?
He pitched a scoreless eighth inning for the Royals last night, and then MacArthur went in the ninth and gave up five. I think the Royals are getting him, getting his feet wet in these late inning situations because they feel like his stuff is quality enough to be in a position to be the closer of the future.
Long
for the
term,
Royals.
Yeah. Long term, I'm with you. This year, though, he's. Zerpa's been better than Harvey over this season.
I agree with you that this season, I'm saying, though, that if the question is it MacArthur? Well, no, I think the answer to the question is MacArthur their closer. Well, no, that question was answered when they acquired Hunter Harvey, that they don't view James MacArthur as their long-term solution at closer.
Long-term, absolutely. I think they went and they got Harvey because they could see that long-term. Yeah. But I do think this year is... I think this year and long-term are two different things, and I do think it's at least worth considering if you're the Royals. Now, look, MacArthur has been good enough, certainly, for all the things that the Royals want to do. What MacArthur has done this year has been good enough for a team to make a run. What I wonder is if there was an opportunity now at a rental proposition, maybe, at an older experience closer, do you at least think about it if you're the Royals? It bolsters your bullpen either way. But I just, you know, as these games get, because now you dropped another game to Cleveland. Now you're six games back when you were just felt like you were within striking distance, all of those things. Like, these little things matter. And it is like, you know, he has given up at least one hit in his every appearance in his last seven appearances. Right. He has done a nice job of getting through those things. But in these really tight situations, I'm just never that confident going into it because of the amount of traffic.
I think part of the issue last night, Harvey,
this year hasn't been that much better, to be perfectly honest. Like, he has also given up a lot of traffic.
Yeah, I think he also
has an ERA north of four.
Yeah, I think part of the issue in last night's game specifically is that Quatrero didn't have a whole lot of other options than to just stick with MacArthur in that situation. He had already pitched Zerpa, he had already pitched Long, he had already pitched Harvey. You know, and so you've got a lot of traffic with MacArthur. Where else are you going to turn? If it were me, and I guess I'm questioning Quatrero's bullpen management, which I really haven't done much of at all this year. So I think that Quatrero, generally speaking, I think has done a fairly good job in managing the bullpen.
He's done a great job.
I think he's done a better job than there were some times last year where I was not a major fan of the way he managed the bullpen last year. I think he's done a much better job this year in that. I didn't love it last night because I would have liked for him to have at least one of those three guys in his back pocket for that specific situation. I think that if you want to roll with James MacArthur in the ninth inning, I get it because his stuff is usually pretty good and pretty electric, but you should always know that he's probably going to have traffic. Like, that's just what you know about James MacArthur. He's going to play with fire. He's going to live dangerously. That's what James MacArthur does pretty consistently. It'd be great to have either Zerpa, Long, or Harvey in your back pocket that you can go to quickly. Like, if it were me, if I'm going to bring out James MacArthur in the ninth inning, maybe just automatically, I might have one of those three guys just warming up, like just automatically get him warming up because you never know.
Well, I mean, let's talk about this after the break. But the problem with that is all three of those guys pitched anyway.
I know. That's my point. Like, maybe not pitch one of those three before MacArthur comes in.
But then who do you go to? Because those are kind of your horses, right? Because you needed them earlier. Let's continue with the bullpen. And maybe this all means they need another bullpen arm, which is totally within the realm of possibility. We'll take a break. We are less than a week away. By the way, from the trade deadline. By the way, all this baseball coverage on KFH presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile, and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use that savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. We're going to continue this bullpen conversation, obviously front and center, after a disappointing loss last night that was blown in the ninth inning. That'll be coming next. Don't forget, we also have WWE star Chad Gable joining the show in just a little while. And our K-State insider, Tim Fitzgerald, will hop in as well. Plenty to get to on Sports Daily today. It's all Brock DeCaster. Don't go away.
...97.5 and 1240 KFH.
All right, welcome back, everybody. We're talking bullpen here on Sports Daily. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster, front and center for the Royals. Well, because they blew one last night. James MacArthur, more specifically, blew one last night. Keep it tuned here for your chance to win some HTO later in the program. We are making our way through this portion of the program, brought to you by Crestview Country Club. Great golfing weather, heating up a little bit, but no big deal. You know, it's July. I think we can handle this. Once we get into those triple digits, maybe not so much. And hey, maybe the heat will kill the mosquitoes. At least it'll keep them at bay. I don't know. All this good weather, Tommy, me and my kids have just been getting annihilated by mosquitoes here lately. But it is a great time of the year. Go out to Crestview. They've got the pool. They've got the golf. They've got the tennis. That's where my wife spends most of her time. Good restaurant, great bar. It's all there for you. Tour the facilities. Go out there. Give them a call. Just tell them you want to go check it out. And tell them we sent you here from Sports Daily. We appreciate Crestview's support on the program. Chad Gable coming up next segment. WWE superstar looking ahead to Raw coming to Interest Bank Arena. We have Tim Fitzgerald joining us top of the next hour as well. Talk a little K-State. But let's keep talking about the Royals bullpen. So we look at it, and you bring up the point of maybe not using one of your other relievers. Well, last night was an example of when that'll bite you, though, because Waka was not his normal recent red hot sharp self. And so Zerpa, Long, and Harvey all needed to be used to get to MacArthur. They were all really good. Only one walk between those three. They pitched 3 1/3. It actually came from Harvey. 3 1/3, scoreless, pretty clean innings to get them to MacArthur. But so that's an example, though, of where that might not work. Yeah, you might not want to use one of those guys to bail out MacArthur, but they had to have them all. So does that tell us they need one more reliever? I think it might. I don't want to overreact to one bad performance from MacArthur because, as I mentioned, he had gone like 11 of 12 without allowing a run. But it's not so much for me the runs as it is the threat of runs because he allows a lot of traffic. He had worked his ERA down to a respectable 3.89, though. But his whip is still high, way too high for a closer. And then this will balloon his ERA back up near 5 after that performance last night because they just kind of at that point, they let him work through it, which is honestly too bad because had they yanked him earlier, that maybe they don't give up the Marte home run. But that, it is what it is. And blown saves are fine. And as we're looking at in the grand scheme of things, that's a frustrating loss, yes, especially going into that day off. Is it the end of the world? No, not really, because for 90% of that game, they were in control. But it still sucks, and it does, with very little time left, beg the question, what's still out there for them to get? Do they need to also attack reliever?
I don't think so. I don't think you necessarily need to worry about that at the trade deadline. I think you can worry about it, but I don't think you need to worry about it at the trade deadline. I think that you can try to find a way to maybe make an improvement there or do some kind of improvement without prioritizing it, I guess is my point at the trade deadline. So here's my point. If they've got to prioritize an additional bat in the outfield specifically. So if they do that, and you can maybe get a reliever as a throw-in piece in a trade, great. That's awesome. If you can include that as part of a deal, perfect. I don't think you need to prioritize that. I don't think you need to go make a separate deal for another reliever. I don't think that you should I absolutely do not believe that you should take away from a deal for another bat to go out and get another reliever for the bullpen. I absolutely do not believe, and I would not be happy if the trade deadline comes and goes and they make a deal for another bullpen piece and they do not address an additional bat. Like that, I would not be okay with that. So if you're going to go make a deal for an outfielder, another piece for the lineup, and you can throw in a reliever as part of that deal, cool. Or if there's a reliever out there that, because this happens from time to time when there are trades that are done involving other teams and there ends up being, you know, too many players on the active roster and players are designated for assignment and players are passed through waivers and that sort of thing. That happens pretty frequently this time of year. You could, in theory, pick up maybe a reliever through the waivers. You could address it that way. Like, there are going to be some other ways that you could maybe grab another reliever, but I don't think that the Royals at this point need to go attack reliever before the trade deadline. Like, specifically do that. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that needs to be the way that they do this.
Yeah, I just think, why not if something's there? Because if you're going to go all in, and again, I'm not sure that they will. I think that they can. I think they can justify it. But if they do, let's say they're like, you know what? We're going to go all in. We're going to go get, you know, Jazz Chisholm, which again, I don't think that's going to happen. But they could. If they go down that road, you might as well try to just literally go all in and get everything that you can. And if, you know, if we looked at this and you said, okay, well, clearly they need a center fielder that can lead off because they, I mean, nothing out of the leadoff spot. It is infuriating. Then the next biggest thing is probably, yeah, another reliever and potentially a high leverage reliever if you can find it. And even if it's not, you know, I don't know, because I don't think the internal options are better. I think right now running MacArthur out is still the best option. And you just have to know that this is possible, right? And you have to know that you're playing with fire. But I'm not sure there's a better option at the moment this season than MacArthur. And again, I'll say this too. That's good enough, right? Like you've got to be good other places. But you know, if you have to choose where you struggle, starting pitching and your lineup is not going to be either, you know, you would choose to struggle in the bullpen more and teams win despite bullpens quite often. The Rangers had a terrible bullpen last year and won the World Series. It could happen. The Royals haven't had an amazing bullpen this year and are off to this great start. It's just, it's possible to improve it. So I'd like to see him leave the option on the table. Harvey is clearly the long-term play. They gave up the sort of assets that you would give up to tell you that. Is he the this year play? I mean, I don't think so. Not at this point. Now, if he comes out and he has four or five really lights out appearances, then I think you could consider it. And then you could just go by committee too. I think Quacharo is, he hasn't really shown this with the Royals, but he is of the background to be able to do that, right? To, you know, to just sort of mix and match it however he can to try and get it done. I think in a perfect world, you do want to assign innings. I still do think mentally that's a better use of the bullpen, but who knows? Just options would be good. And I think that if there is the opportunity to bring in another option, it might be something they could think about. What if they can't go find that bat that they need? Wouldn't you still then want to see them improve any way they can? And I'd say it's their next biggest need.
I think they'll be able to find the bat that they need. I think they'll be able to work out a deal to make it happen. I'm not in support of them sacrificing a potential trade for a bat that I think that that's clearly their number one need at this point, in my opinion.
Not even close.
Still, right. Even with what happened last night
in the
bullpen, that's clearly their number one need. I don't want them to sacrifice a potential trade or a deal by, you know, then going out and getting another reliever. I just don't think that that's going to be the best bet for them, not only this year, but in future years. I mean, I would, at this point, I think that the best bet for them, I've kind of shifted on this, especially the way that they played after the All-Star break. I know that they've dropped two in a row against the Diamondbacks, but I'd like to see them get a player that can contribute and help them this year, but also has a couple of years of team control after this year. I think that would be ideal for the Royals. That can help them compete this year and next year, and maybe even a year after that, maybe two additional years of team control. And there are several outfielders, there are several bats out there that fit that profile. Now, don't get me wrong, if ultimately the end result is Tommy Pham, somebody like that, okay, cool. Like, I get that, that's fine. I don't know, like, that maybe still wouldn't be my top choice, but I get it. I'd be okay with that. But there are some bats out there that are outfielders that I would totally be on board with.
It is like not even in the same stratosphere to me as a bigger need. Like the need at the top of the order is so glaring. Another 0 for performance. In fact, it was 0 for 5 because you had Frazier and then Hampson gave it a shot. Like it is ridiculous. It's insane how they are getting nothing out of the top of their lineup. So not even same stratosphere. Don't misunderstand. Like we're not close on what this team needs more than one thing over the other. It is a leadoff hitting center fielder.
Absolutely.
So badly.
Absolutely.
And so I'm not saying this like trumps that as far as a need for the team. I'm saying, can it be that and something else? We're so focused on that I don't want to lose sight of the fact that there may be a need still for another relief pitcher. I don't think Hunter Harvey is the closer this year. I think he certainly can be for the future. The Royals certainly hope that too because of what they gave up to get him. Maybe he can be by the end of this year. I think that's possible. I mean, you look at his year and he was off to a really nice start. He's pitched a lot. He was used a lot by Washington. And for a lot of that, he was really good. And then it was sort of right before he got traded, to be perfectly honest with you. It sort of unraveled on him just a little bit. And you know, he's given the Royals two appearances. And in one of those two appearances, he gave up a run and two hits and a walk. And like, you're like, okay, I don't...
It was his very first appearance with the Royals. Very first time out with a brand new team.
Sure.
I'm willing to cut a little bit of slack for that.
But I'm not willing to cut him any more slack than James MacArthur is my point. Like if you're asking me of those two right now, I mean MacArthur again, 11 out of 12 times didn't allow a run.
I'm certainly not advocating for Hunter Harvey to be the closer today.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So if we don't think he will be by the end of the year, and I just think that's, I don't even know how you could consider that right now as we know the trade deadline is now 6 days away or 5 days away, whatever it is. So as we're so laser focused on the most glaring, obvious need, as big a need as any team at the deadline has, I just wonder if there's still room to bring in another reliever and just try to bolster things. And maybe it is simply because you might need somebody in the fifth inning or sixth inning to get you to the ability to bail MacArthur out with one of your better pitchers. But I also, you know, if you're drawing it up and you're, you don't want to do that either. You don't want to leave games where you have felt like you left your best, your best players out there either. And so, or your best arms, I'll say, unused in a game like that. Like that in theory was exactly how you would like to see a game go if your starting pitcher is going to struggle last night, if you're Cotraro. I mean, that's the blueprint right there. MacArthur just didn't get it done. This could all be as simple as MacArthur just didn't get it done. If he goes another 11 out of 12 games without allowing a run, this is all a moot point no matter how much traffic he allows. Maybe he just allows traffic. Maybe that's just his thing, and it's effective, and it's a thing that makes you nervous, but it's effective. 11 out of 12 ain't bad. I'll take that. You know, I'll take 33 saves essentially with three blown saves every day. But I don't know if it has to be the only option if there's something that presents itself out there at the deadline that, you know, might make things a little easier for them.
And I just don't know how often a scenario, we know that James MacArthur is going to allow traffic. He's going to get himself in some hot water. That's just kind of what he does. But I don't know how often a scenario will present itself that happened last night where James McArthur gets himself in trouble, number one, but Zerpa, Long, and Harvey, all three of them have already pitched because the starting pitcher doesn't have his best stuff. Like, that was kind of the perfect storm that you don't want to have happen. Like, I'm always going to be an advocate for if you have James McArthur in a save situation in the bottom of the ninth, close game, high leverage, all of that, have one of those three guys in your back pocket available just in case McArthur gets in trouble. It's rarely going to be a clean inning for McArthur. Will he convert? The odds are probably yes, but it's probably not going to be clean. It's usually not going to be clean. So at least have one of those guys in your back pocket, but that wasn't available to Quatrero last night. I think the odds of that happening in that way, it's not going to happen like that all the time, but you want to try to protect against it as often as possible. I would have maybe liked to see, they've got Bubic in the bullpen now. He's not starting games. Maybe him starting out, the relievers coming out of the bullpen, as opposed to who was the first one out? Was it Zerpa last night? Was the first one out of the bullpen?
And he gave you more than an inning.
Maybe you start with Bubic instead of Zerpa coming out of the pen, and then, maybe you've got one of those guys left. I don't know. I'm just saying, like, there are at least a couple of other options out there. Schreiber is, another reliever. I don't know what their usage looks like and if those guys were available or not. But, still, I'm saying that it's not just those three guys that are in the bullpen. Stratton is not a great option, but he's there. So there are other options on the table.
You can't have your closer though with that in the back of his head, and you can't not use your best pitchers to get you to your closer. You either take the job away from him and give it to one of those other guys, or you have to try to get it to him and have all the confidence in the world in him. Nothing about last night is going to cost James McArthur his job singularly. Again, if he starts another stretch like he had, he'll be fine. But it's not so much that as what are we looking at big picture here? And is there another option out there? And should they be looking for another option? How many good relievers on this team do you trust? Like, how many of their guys do you really trust? It's Zerpa, it's Long, and you would hope now that it's Harvey and McArthur. That's four. That's enough. If you reach the postseason,
you don't trust Bubic.
You better be in the bullpen. No, not necessarily yet, because we haven't seen enough of it. This is a new thing he's being asked to do.
Do you trust Schreiber at all?
Sure, it depends on the role. Yes, yeah. You trust guys in their roles. Yes.
I trust Stratton in a certain role in the bullpen. I don't trust Stratton in the ninth inning. I might trust him in the fifth inning.
Yeah, look, I'll trust anybody in the fifth inning. It's the fifth inning. You got to kind of find... I'm trying... When I think about the Royals, here's what I'm thinking about. I am thinking about what players are helping me win a World Series? Because that if the Royals end up going and doing something crazy aggressive, that's what they have to think about. They have to think that way. But I look at a bullpen now, Zerpa of... Let me take that back. Long has been, by WHIP, which is a really good way to evaluate bullpen guys, your most effective reliever, right? At 1.17. Zerpa's the next best. He's all the way up at 1.3. And I will say this for Bubic. He's only pitched six innings, but he's been really good so far. So maybe he can develop into that. Maybe they say, but I also think, and I'll tell you that I would imagine they see his value in having to step in and be a starter when they need it. I'm not sure they're ready to say, all right, Bubic, you're a reliever now. Stratton has been fine. He's been okay, but he's got 4.73 ERA. Nick Anderson, over four. Will Smith, over four. McArthur, way over four. Schreiber, over four. Carlos Hernandez had been fine. He's been called down. Like, they could really use another high-quality reliever. Now, do they go do it? We'll see, and I don't think they have to have it, but I absolutely think they could use it. No question, they could use a really high-quality reliever. We can get into that second hour. We can get into it tomorrow as well. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Monday Night Raw is coming to Interest Bank Arena. And we're going to be joined by Chad Gable, WWE superstar on that Raw roster. He's going to look ahead for us. We'll have a little fun there with some pro wrestling. That's next on Sports Daily.
KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. Getting connected here. We open the next couple of minutes with WWE superstar Chad Gable on the IHOP hotline. Brought to you by IHOP. IHOP excited to bring back its all-you-can-eat pancakes deal that runs through September 15th. And we will get right now Chad Gable joining us on the program. We've got Monday Night Raw coming to Intrust Bank Arena on December 9th. Those tickets will go on sale tomorrow at 10 o'clock in the morning. Chad Gable joining us here. Chad, welcome into Sports Daily. How are you?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. How are you?
We're doing great. We're doing great. So you guys are coming to Wichita. Have you personally been? I know Wichita's had a series of events over the past few years. Have you made your way to Wichita to Intrust yet?
Oh, yes. Many times I've been to Wichita.
How's the crowd? I'm going to try to get to this one. I grew up a just massive wrestling fan. I am, you know, I've got young kids now and things have waned on me lately, but I love live events. How does the Wichita crowd typically fare? I assume good, because you guys keep coming back.
Yeah, it's great. You know, some of these towns stick out specifically to me as towns maybe that wouldn't right off the top of your head might not strike you as would be this incredible crowd, but Wichita's always great. It's like, they're so welcoming, and you can tell they just have a passion for the product there. And, you know, that just speaks to the reason that I assume we keep coming back so often. You know, it's great.
Chad, I got to ask you a little bit about your background. I was reading up on you a little bit. You and I are actually 4 days apart in age. You were born on March 8th of 86. I was born on March 12th of 86. So we're right there next to each other. I grew up when I was like in high school, middle school, high school. I grew up a massive Kurt Angle fan. I know that you've got amateur wrestling in your background. Of course, he was an Olympic gold medalist. You know, you competed in the Olympics and all of that. Of course, the Olympics are getting started, here in just a couple of days also. I'm assuming, you know, Kurt Angle, big for you as well. And now you're, you know, in the WWE. So what's that been like for you, your background in amateur wrestling and all of that?
Yeah, I was an amateur wrestler for over 20 years, culminated with wrestling in the Olympics in London in 2012. Just the most special time, you know, of my life, really, my family there to share it. But all that to say, you know, Kurt was clearly a big inspiration growing up. And like you said, at a very influential age as well, like we were very influenceable, you know, at that time period when Kurt was breaking in. And so for me as an amateur who was also a fan, like not just a fan, man, but I was obsessed. Like I tell people this all the time that like before the Olympics was ever even a real possibility for me, I wanted to be in the WWE. I wanted to be a pro wrestler, man. That was my dream. I was obsessed. And so to see Kurt do that at that time really showed me that it's possible, you know? And so like grew up really kind of modeling myself after that. And then, you know, it just came to fruition. It just worked out because right in 2012 in London, the WWE had some scouts over there looking for, like, you know, guys with amateur and athletic backgrounds. And so I made some connections and ended up getting a tryout. And the timing just worked out great. The stars aligned and it worked out for me, man. So I'm very fortunate.
That's awesome. This is Jacob Albrecht here. Over my right shoulder right now is an old wrestling buddy, Macho Man, that I used to battle on the trampoline.
Oh, yeah.
I'm with you. Huge fan growing up. We were great friends with the late, great Terry Funk in our family. I'm from the Texas Panhandle, which is just so rich with wrestling background. But it is interesting to me where all the different paths that come in, whether it's football players, amateur wrestlers, great athletes, entertainers, I've always really appreciated the collection of talent and the different places it comes from. And, you know, you guys are sort of entering this new era. Do you ever sit back and just kind of laugh at all the different paths people get to the point you're at?
To me, it's just more interesting than anything, because there is no limit to or like expected stereotype to where you come from these days. You know, we're taking from everywhere. And the cool thing about the athletic side of it is that's almost taking over more than anything, you know. And I think that's a big, you can attribute that to Hunter, to Triple H's vision for the product. It's grown to be a more athletically based product. And you see that in the ring and in what we do nowadays. There's an expectation, man, like in ring wise and what you're expected to deliver to the crowd athletically. There's no more of, like, very, very little of these like bumbling giants that can't move or bodybuilder style guys that can't really move. Everybody's expected to put on like really, really good matches, and that's part of what we do now. And Hunter kind of started instilling that with NXT, you know, early on when I first got there. You saw a lot more of these football players and gymnasts and people with athletic backgrounds coming in and being molded and taught to do what we do. And I think it's really cool, and you're seeing it pay off now 10 years later, where the in-ring style is just so hard-hitting and so intense and athletic, and I think the crowd really, really, really enjoys it.
You've had a bunch of success in your time in WWE, and whether we're talking about, you know, in the tag team division or, you know, as a solo wrestler, what are things looking like with you right now in the course of your career? What's happening for folks that, you know, really haven't had a chance to follow things lately? What are things looking like right now for you, and what can they expect when WWE rolls into Wichita?
Yeah, so for those that haven't really been following too much lately, I've taken on more of a singles role. I've traditionally been known as a tag team wrestler, which was great. I won tag team championships on NXT, SmackDown, and Raw. But, you know, as anybody would or should, I've wanted to progress and elevate my career and become a singles guy. And so over the course of about the last 18 months, I've been doing that. I've broken away from my group, the Alpha Academy, who I was with for going on 3 or 4 years, and now doing my own thing, and it's going very well. I've had many, many intercontinental title matches over the past year, and I'm just basically breaking out and showing that I can stand on my own, which for me is kind of a big feather in my cap to show that, you know, I've always been on the smaller side, considered like a small guy, which I think is why I was kind of stuck in the tag team division for so long, but now have shown that that is not going to be my limiting factor, that I can, in fact, hang with the big guys, and it's pretty gratifying and rewarding. So, and as far as what they can expect in Wichita, man, these live shows we've been doing, and the crowds have been insane, and it's almost like every crowd in every city is trying to top the one before them, and I expect no less from Wichita. It's just, we're firing on all cylinders right now, so you should surely get out there and get your tickets. The tickets are already available right now, so scoop them up, because we are selling out like crazy, and I promise you, you don't want to miss it.
Well, listen, Chad, if you need help, when I was about 18 years old, I was a very amateur pro wrestler on the local YMCA and middle school scene. Mickey Blaze, okay. Twisted Steel, Sex Appeal. Don't take that. If you need some backup, wow. I see you're feuding with the Wyatts there. If you need some help, yeah. You know, we can work something out. I might still have a little bit left in the tank.
You know what, man? I'm recruiting anybody and anyone willing to help right now, because those guys are crazy. There's 6 of them, and I don't see myself fighting them alone. So I'll take your resume, shoot it on over to me. What was it? Twisted Steel?
Twisted Steel, Sex Appeal. Yeah. Twisted Steel, Sex Appeal.
Okay, we might have to tweak that a little bit.
Please do.
But I'll keep you in mind, brother.
I might have to borrow a singlet, which, you know, get it out there.
Nobody wants to see that.
We'll get your people in touch with my people if you need some backup.
We'll work it out, man. I've got your number.
Yeah. Okay. More importantly, Chad, you got those tickets. It's December 9th. We're really looking forward to it. I'm going to try to make it out. It's been a while since I've been to a live show. It'll be fun. We appreciate you stopping by. Good luck. Stay healthy. And we'll see you in Wichita here in a few months.
Awesome, guys. I appreciate you having me. Thank you. Looking forward to Wichita.
There goes Chad Gable. WWE superstar, former Olympian, which is great timing as the Olympics are coming up in Paris here in a couple of days. But that's fun. Always love that. Tommy and I, obviously, wrestling a big part of our childhoods. And, you know, I love it so much and appreciate it so much. And it's part of my family. And I love that those guys are coming in. I got so much respect for what they do and the life they live. So hopefully it's a great crowd at Interest Bank Arena. And I am going to try. I have not made one of the televised events, Tommy. I really want to get out to that one. So maybe we'll make that happen. All right. We're up against it here. Let's take a quick break. Tim Fitzgerald, our K-State insider, are going to join us. We think Tim is going to try and join us via video. Ladies, just saying.
Watch out.
Fitz is coming up.
I think he's in the makeup chair as we speak, getting all dolled up for the interview.
That's right. We'll have that next. Hour number two of Sports Daily coming right up.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is hour number two. Jacob Albrecht, Tommy Kester, joined by Tim Fitzgerald, publisher, GoPowerCat.com, or his K-State insider duties here on Sports Daily via video for the first time. Before we get to Jad, I got a note. Did Chad leave you any info just in case on the event if you need some backup there?
I have some contact details, yes.
For my net, right? Okay.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Who knows, everybody? You might see me out there on Monday Night Raw. Appreciate Chad Gable stopping by. If you missed any of that conversation, you can go back. You can watch that on our video stream, which you can find now on 12 News Connected. We are happy to be here with you. Happy to have Fitz with us. Fitz and the pup. What's pup's name there, Fitz, if you're watching on the video stream?
No,
we got them both here. We got them both.
Yeah. Let's do the brown one's Daphne.
How's it going out there? Looks beautiful out on the back deck.
Yeah, it is. It's a little humid, but it's good. I decided not to be in the studio for you boys. I came outside.
I love it. It is a beautiful day. We are so happy to be able to do these video interviews, which we just started this week. So that'll be another wrinkle for everybody. You know, Fitz, it's a strange time. It's a calm before the storm. What have we missed over the past couple of weeks in K-State sports? I assume the basketball team is working like most are now. But, you know, is there anything the casual fan has missed out on really since Big 12 Media Days?
No. It's pretty slow. And because this is a vacation window, particularly for football coaches. Guys, we got an open practice August 1st. That's less than a week. So, it's crazy. This is the final hurrah for football coaches to get out there. And they're taking advantage of it. I know Coach Kleiman went to the mountains of Colorado for a good solid week and just put his phone down. So they all needed that refresher before football really kicks in.
Are there any major question marks, you know, specifically offensively for this football team, you know, as we get closer and closer, inching closer, you know, to the start of the season? Is it mainly offensive line? I mean, are there things that we're looking at that we just even still don't know how it's going to pan out?
But offensive line is probably the biggest question mark for this team. And the fact that they've been so set there for many years, they've had such, you know, reliable offensive linemen. And they had a completely dominant guard in Cooper Beebe. So trying to retool that offensive line with the new quarterback is critical to get it down early. You don't want to get Avery Johnson beaten up early in the season. So we'll see if they get that settled in pretty quickly. But that's probably the biggest question mark on this team. You know, that's not to say there aren't other issues that need to be sorted out here in fall camp, but really, getting that offensive line set is such a crucial piece of what K-State wants to do offensively.
Fitz, I want to go to ACC Media Days for just a second. They've been sort of the topic of things. It sounds like the reporting is Florida State and Clemson are not going to do anything as soon as next year. That deadline most people expect will come and go. But their commissioner, and I don't blame him for this necessarily, you know, is sort of taking swings back at your mark. We're clearly the third best league and all of these things. But I just, all I see when I see anything come out of the ACC is it's history repeating itself. They're going to do the same thing and fall into the same trap the Pac-12 fell in, that the Big 12 almost fell into. And it just seems inevitable, and that there's no consideration for them to do something else to avoid that inevitability, is that they'll get poached and they'll crumble.
Yeah, it's a very strange situation. It is similar to the Pac-12 and different in the fact that the media contract's in place, so that's not looming over their head. Their media contract is less than ideal, but they do have one in place, and there is an exit fee in place that is, you know, nobody knows for sure what it is because they haven't released any of that information, which is part of the court cases that they should be public information. I think the ACC purists are banking on literally their plan right now is to hold Florida State and Clemson hostage by having such a big buyout they can't leave. That makes for a lovely conference. But they really can't afford to have them leave either. So they're kind of in a bad situation. I thought Phillips's comments at the ACC football kickoff were really interesting. And, you know, I've never heard a commissioner come out swinging at one of his own member schools quite like that. So it was mostly aimed at Florida State and trying to, you know, shove it in the face of your mark. What they don't get is your mark and the Big 12 are very comfortable with where they're at. They're in a very solid position. They can throw insults and believe what they want to believe. But, you know, I think the future will bear out that the Big 12 is indeed the third most important conference, because it's going to show up in the money being paid for media rights.
The Big 12 announced that they hired a director of football operations and competition. And this person comes from the University of Georgia. He was the assistant AD and director of football operations for the last three seasons. So kind of interesting that Brett Yormark brings in somebody to work for the conference that had spent 3 years for a school in the SEC that had won a couple of national championships to work in bolstering the overall football product for that conference. You know, clearly, as we all know, football is the revenue driver long-term. I mean, it just, to me, again, shows just the importance and the priority that Yormark is placing on bolstering up what the Big 12 wants to do with football.
That sounds like a great job. I'd love that job.
Yeah.
Because I don't know what entails that job. I don't know what you do at the conference level for football operations. You don't have a football team from the Big 12. You've got a bunch of schools that have football teams. So I don't know exactly what that will encase, but you know, Yormark doesn't hire people to give a friend a job. He always has purpose behind what he does. And keep in mind, his number one thing from the presidents and chancellors is up the profit, you know, bring on more money. So he's not one to be out there just spending money unless he sees it as a position of need. So maybe they've got some things that they feel like at the conference level will really help their football operations and kind of, you know, maybe their projection of what they are out across the country.
It is all about money. Tim Fitzgerald, GoPowerCat.com publisher, at Life of Fitz on social media. And because it's all about money, that's where you see all this. And in the next, what do we have, 4 years left until the Big 12 has to go back to the table. And in order to make the money that they'll need to make to pay the players that they're going to inevitably have to share revenue with when the time comes, they do have to drive more money, which means geography and anything else is out the window. How many teams do you think are out there realistically that make the league more valuable? We know Florida State and Clemson would.
Yeah.
But are there 6 of them, 10 of them? Like, how many teams could actually increase that value the next time they go to the table, do you think?
There's a number in the ACC, which is the greatest irony of the ACC predicament. They've got brands that can help the Big 12. They've got brands that could help the Big 10 or SEC that they want. But put together as a group, they don't carry much value. It's a strange thing because it's all based on viewership and engagement. And look, let's be blunt here. Florida State's right. There are schools in that conference that are weighing it down dramatically because they just don't bring much to the table. They don't bring much viewership. They don't, you know, particularly bring great sports. And that's their biggest concern. While in the Big 12, I don't think that's necessarily true. I'll be honest. I think Arizona State needs to catch up, and there's some other schools. But everyone takes it seriously. You know, there's just some schools out there that just don't seem that invested in college sports, and that it really damages the entire conference. But, yeah, Florida State, Clemson, are the top two, And if you're the Big 12, you're looking at, you know, football exposure. And the next two in that conference with viewing value are Louisville and Miami. And another piece of irony is the most coveted piece of the ACC grouping is North Carolina, because it's a huge footprint. It's a huge university. They do get pretty good ratings. But if you're just looking at pure numbers right now, they're not in the top four of valuable assets in terms of what the Big 12 wants from the ACC.
I want to go back to Wildcat football here really quickly, Fitz. Avery Johnson specifically, I saw in the New York Post earlier this week. I don't know if you knew this. I'm an avid New York Post reader daily. I'm reading it from front to back. There was a writer that put Avery Johnson in the Heisman conversation for this season. I'm not sure how realistic that is, and I know a lot of it's going to be determinant on the success of the team overall, you know, and how high profile the team ends up being. And maybe with the 12-team playoff format, you know, I think that maybe becomes more realistic. I certainly think that maybe next season that becomes more realistic. But how realistic do you think that could potentially be? Or what would need to happen in your mind for Avery Johnson this year to be a legitimate Heisman contender?
Well, the writer said he was going to win it, which mathematically gets very difficult to get to, because if he's going to win the Heisman, he has to go minimum 3,500 yards passing and over 1,000 rushing.
Yeah.
And those are huge numbers for K-State's offense, because it's more of a ball possession type offense, or has been. Maybe it changes with the dynamic quarterback, the level of Avery Johnson. But I think even your most avid Avery Johnson supporter would say, slow down here, man. It's his first year as starting quarterback, and he's going to make mistakes. He's going to have some struggles, but he is going to get better. I think you're right. 2025, which he's got to be in school through that season, is the bigger one to look at. Because also, for what we started the segment with, the offensive line will be more settled at that point, I believe, and have some more time to gather themselves. I just think the future is so huge for Avery Johnson. The upside's absolutely amazing. But winning a Heisman in 2024, it's going to be an amazing run for Kansas State into the playoffs, because you probably have to be unbeaten, if not at worst one loss, for a Kansas State quarterback to be in that mix.
I have my ticket in on him, and I have had it for a long time, but I also have one on Jalen Daniels. So I'd ask you this, Fitz. Yeah. More likely to win a dark horse Heisman, Avery Johnson, or a fully healthy and he has played all games, Jalen Daniels?
It's hard to say. I would probably, just if all things, other things were equal, it's Jalen Daniels, just because he's a highlight reel. But the way the Heisman works with teams such as Kansas and Kansas State, there's a team factor in there.
Yeah,
you can't advance. Look, we had a quarterback from LSU win the Heisman last year, and I don't know what they have, three or four losses.
Yeah,
rules are different for Kansas State and Kansas. So if Kansas has some problems on defense or whatever, and they don't accomplish what they hope to accomplish, Jalen didn't have a chance, and the same would be true with Avery. So it's that's one of my frustrating things about it, is how the voters kind of react to different schools with different priorities or different parameters of judgment. It doesn't make sense to me as a voter what they do. But I also look at the list. You mentioned the odds. You go look at the list of the odds. And the ones I saw the other day, three of the top five are former Big 12 quarterbacks. Dylan Gabriel is the favorite to win the Heisman. Guys, he's not that good.
I don't think he's as good as either of those guys we just mentioned.
I don't understand what that hype is. Also, Quinn Ewers is in there. Sorry, he's not that good. And Will Howard's up there too, and I think Will's going to have a big season with that Ohio State offense, but is he going to put up the kind of consistent play and flashy plays that you need to win the Heisman Trophy? And I think it's a wide open field this year, and I think someone not expected will win it, but I do think it'll be someone with a little more experience that can stay healthy through the year. And right now I have doubts about Avery having the kind of performance you need and Jalen trying to stay healthy, because anytime you've been fighting a bad back in your career, it's just going to linger. And that question is always going to be around it.
I don't know if you had a chance to watch or lock in at all to the TBT here in Wichita. Earlier this week, K-State's alumni team Purple Rain fell in their opener against Team Colorado. They ultimately ran all the way through the Wichita Regional, and they advance out of the Wichita Regional. I watched that opening game with Purple Rain. Really, it was, for me, even though K-State's alumni team lost, it was fun to watch Jacob Pullen hit all four of his shots from beyond the arc that he took. Was 4 of 12 from the field, but hit those four shots from beyond the arc. And Kamau Stokes had 14 points. Fun to watch him as well. Of course, they lose in their opening round, but at least I think it's fun to see kind of those guys come back and play and be able to, have that nostalgia factor, I think.
Yeah, that's what's cool about the tournament is, you do see collections of players, but there's a consistency to the disappointments the K-State team has had through the years. They just can't quite get the right collection of players and make the plays at the right times to advance out of that regional. So it's been a little frustrating for K-State fans. They kind of get invested every year and then boink. I'm just not a big TBT fan. I think it's kind of cool. It fills a gap, but I'm not that invested in it. And we cover it because the fans are interested in it. And it just continues to kind of different name, same results.
Yeah, it's weird to say. I mean, the Elam ending is incredible, but the tournament itself is very predicated on the local teams. All right, Fitz, what do you guys have going at GoPowerCat.com this week?
Well, we got a little bit more coming up here with spring football previews. Got a lot of recruiting stuff going up right now, and of course, daily deliveries that go up every day. And some interesting things going on right now with scholarship limits being raised for football, men's basketball, volleyball, softball, and baseball. And I get all of them except the football component. I see what they're trying to do, but it's just going to be the rich getting richer and stockpiling talent. If you ask me, it's going to really hurt non-Power 5, Power 4 football and, the FCS, and down into Division 2 even. Because if every Power team would use the 20 extra scholarships, that's 1,300 players being stockpiled at that level that wouldn't have been there before, or maybe they would have been as walk-ons. But I'm not comfortable with that, guys. You mentioned the greed. I think it's now taken over to the fact where they don't even want lower levels of football to have nice things. And I'm just kind of just not at ease with it.
I had not seen that ruling. We will check that. I'm going to check that out at GoPowerCat.com because that's something that I have missed. So we'll check that, Fitz. Next week, we're going to have a football game of sorts or an open practice in the books when we talk to you. That's going to be good stuff.
It's crazy. I'm sorry. How is it August?
I know.
Pretty soon. I don't understand what happened.
Hey, we got a week. Summer. We got a week. Our kids are going back to school in like less than 3 weeks. I don't know what to think about all of that, but the good news is, ladies, Fitz can join us via video now.
I was going to say, I'm getting instant feedback right now that the popularity of our program has now skyrocketed because Fitz is on camera with us.
I'll just easy.
Okay. Fitz, this is a family program here. It's a family program, but we'll bring it back next week. Fitz, we appreciate it, buddy. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, boys. Great to see you.
There goes Tim Fitzgerald, GoPowerCat.com, at Life of Fitz on social media, joining us via the IHOP hotline, brought to you by IHOP. IHOP's excited to bring back its all-you-can-eat pancakes deal through September 15th. We're going to come back. All right, we've had back-to-back interviews. Appreciate Chad Gable, WWE superstar. I'm told Chad is working with the WWE executives to see if Mickey Blaze might need to make an appearance. So we'll check in on that as well. But we've got to get back
some waivers for you to sign.
What am I releasing? If I'm injured, am I signing some sort of release?
I haven't gotten through all of the fine print, but that appears to be the gist of it.
I would hope that anybody viewing it would sign a waiver as well.
Yeah, there's no chance Mickey Blaze would get hurt. Hey, I just saw my CG. I appreciate that. How long has that been up?
Since Chad's been on with us.
No way.
Yeah.
I just saw that. That's fantastic. I'm going to stall here so I can take a little screen grab as we're making our way through. While I'm stalling, let's give away some HTO. If you want to win some free rain coffee, You can do that right now with us here by texting the short code TEA to 20357. That's 20357. You can win a free iced tea from either Wichita location of HTO or in Derby. You can also win some free rain coffee from East Wichita or Derby. Good luck, everybody. 20357. Just text the keyword T to win right now. We'll come back. More Sports Daily right after this.
...97.5 and 1240 KFH.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines Gel Flex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Odyssey celebrates the back-to-school season, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Hey, fantasy football owners, the road to winning your fantasy football championship starts now. I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive into the position that's going to make or break your fantasy roster: wide receivers. We analyze route running, target share, and all the metrics that matter, giving you the insights you need to draft the best wide receivers. As you prep for your draft, let us give you the coverage you need. Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
All right, welcome back into Sports Daily, everybody. Mickey Blaze alongside Tommy Caster. We are making our way through a Thursday, and we are getting you ready for a day off for the Royals. No baseball today. And, you know, don't take it for granted, because it's the only time they're going to have a day off for a while here until August 11th. I don't feel terrible about the loss last night because it was a blown save. And normally those make me angrier than anything, but I don't think it's something that would tell us they're not still feeling it, you know, coming out of the All-Star break, right? Like they very much should have won that game. And then we'd be talking about 5 out of 6 coming out of the break. And I know it's frustrating, and they lost ground on Minnesota and they lost ground on Cleveland and all of those things, but it doesn't make me as angry as it typically would. And I hope that holds true after the break, because after the break, guess what? They get to go on the road where they haven't been nearly as good. So they're going to be tested here, and we'll see how it goes. They'll line up some pitching and take a swing at it. But as we get into this final day before the trade deadline, you would think this is an opportunity for the front office to get on the phones and try to do anything they can to make something happen. You'd seen another rumor yesterday, Tommy, that they're going after an A's player that they have previously dropped. And I would imagine there is just like a long list of guys that the Royals have down that they're checking in on, which is one reason this may take a little longer and literally be a deadline type deal, because they have to A, evaluate and find out who they really want, how much they want them, how much they're willing to give up, what teams are willing to give them up. All those things are happening, and it changes every day. We started this week saying, let's say the Texas Rangers, for example, were probably sellers. Well, now they're probably buyers all of a sudden. And so it goes back and forth like that across baseball, and it's going to continue to do that.
By the day.
there are teams that will, yes,
yeah,
go back and forth and waffle every single day. The Rangers now on a 4-game win streak, as an example, only 3 games back in the American League West. That's it. 3 games back.
Yeah.
You think they're going to sell? They're not going to sell. And there are teams like that across baseball.
I mean, they might
if they lose a bunch of games right now, right in a row. But, you know, you look around baseball and there are teams like that all over the place.
My Braves, are not going to catch the Phillies. They're too far back. They don't have the firepower to catch the Phillies. They've been bit by the injury bug. Max Fried is on the IL now. Ozzie Albies is on the IL. He won't be back until late September. You know, they've lost, like, I think 3 in a row. They're really slumping right now because of the injuries. They're going to be a wild card team barring a major epic collapse. So I think that they'll still add, but they're not going to be overly aggressive, I don't think. They'll probably try to plug some holes here and there just to kind of keep pace and, you know, maybe try to make the playoffs and see what they can do. But it's not going to be like we're going to go all in and be uber aggressive. Going back to the Royals, ESPN, and you mentioned this a moment ago, it's funny because this time of year with the trade deadline, there's a big difference between reporting and rumors. And there are rumors out there that ESPN is talking about. They're not reporting on anything. They're just talking about rumors that the Royals are interested in Brent Rooker from the Athletics. The Athletics picked up Rooker off of waivers. The Royals put him on waivers at the end of 2022. Last year, Rooker was an all-star with the A's. And then this year, he's been even better. He's hit a bunch of home runs. The interesting thing about Rooker is that he's a DH. He's only started, I think, 13 games in the field. The rest of the games, he's been a designated hitter. And then the question begs with the Royals, well, they've got Salvi, you know, at DH when he plays there. And then they've got, you know, Pasquantino, who can play DH. And then they've got, you know, there have been other players that have DH'd for
Fermin
as DH. Like, they've got options at designated hitter. So then how are they going to manage all of that? But when you've got somebody that's a power bat like Brent Rooker, and it's been consistent over the last 2 years, and, oh, by the way, he played in the Royals organization up until the end of 2022, that is an interesting fit. It does not solve the issue of a leadoff hitter that can play center field and that swings a big bat, but it does add more.
You could put him at the top of the lineup,
but it does absolutely add some pop and some power to your lineup for sure.
You could add him to the top of the lineup because he gets on base a ton. He would get on base. I mean, he's up there with like Bobby Witt Jr. as far as that goes this year. So you could do that. I don't know. Like, they really, really need Hunter Renfroe to learn how to play center field all of a sudden. And I don't think you want to do that either, because you don't want to lose the defense. But like, it is a bit of a problem. And I think MJ Melendez could absolutely be a platoon player and still help this team. Like, if you can bring in a bat like that, you probably should go ahead and do it. And the other thing about a guy like Rooker, and I'll have to look up his contract, he could help you for a while. The way he's gone, it's, you know, and I know that stings that you had him and you just let him go. But I mean, he was not this kind of player forever. Last year, his pop shone through and he hit 30 home runs. He's going to hit more than that this year. His average has jumped almost 45 points this year. He's been better everywhere. Guys bloom late. This happens all the time in baseball. So he would be another guy, and he is not an unrestricted free agent, Tommy, until 2028. So yeah, you're talking about 3.5 years.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep. And when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Odyssey celebrates the back-to-school season, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Hey, fantasy football owners, the road to winning your fantasy football championship starts now. I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive into the position that's going to make or break your fantasy roster, wide receivers. We analyze route running, target share, and all the metrics that matter, giving you the insights you need to draft the best wide receivers. As you prep for your draft, let us give you the coverage you need. Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Years of control. So that's the sort of name that's interesting. Like Harvey, right? Those are plays that are, yeah, they'd help you this year, but they're plays that you're looking at long term. If you go trade for Brent Rooker, you're evaluating him as your everyday outfielder, corner outfielder for the next 3 years. You're not evaluating him as a DH. I don't think they're evaluating any player as a DH because they need Salvi to be able to play that position some, or Vinny Pasquantino, one of the two, right? And one of those guys is going to have to learn a new position. That ain't happening. So that's another like long-term move that can also help you in the short term. It's a really interesting name, and it probably a moderately expensive name at this point, I would imagine. But he doesn't solve your immediate need. He does one, but he's going to, if you go get Rooker, probably MJ Melendez's role on this team goes way down. And that's okay. Like that's, you know, that's okay. He can platoon, he can fill in. Somebody's going to get hurt most likely. It's a good problem to have. I wouldn't get Brent Rooker if he couldn't lead off. But, you know, the way he's gotten on base, just put him up there. Who cares? Or lead off Vinny Pasquantino at this point. Like, lead one of them off. Stop worrying about how fast a guy is if they can be your leadoff batter. No, you just need somebody on base for those other three guys to try to knock them in. You're getting nothing out of that spot. And unless they try Freddie Freeman there, I'm not sure they have anybody on the roster that could even be a better. I mean, these guys are 0 for every night. It's wild. I've never seen anything like it. They're always over.
When I read that rumor that they're looking at Brent Rooker and they're kicking the tires on that move potentially, it told me one thing that I think is really, really important and something that I think it bears watching as we inch closer to the deadline on Tuesday. And that is, I believe the Royals are going to make multiple high-profile, potentially, moves before the trade deadline. The reason I say that is because if the rumor was that they were linked to a center fielder that could be a leadoff hitter and that could get on base, if that was the rumor, then I would think, okay, well, that's the move they're going to make. They're going to make one move. They're linked to that one player. They're going to make one trade to get the one guy that they need to fill that one role.
Yeah, I don't think so.
But they're rumored, and it's ESPN, they're rumored with a guy that is not a center fielder, that has played all but 13 games at the DH spot in the lineup. He could be a leadoff hitter, but he hits a bunch of home runs. He does not solve your issue in the field. And that's the rumor currently. So that would lead me to believe that while that's the one trade that has been rumored and talked about and that's out there right now, that's, you know, everybody's talking about, there are other ones that are being worked on, discussed, whatever, behind the scenes that are not being rumored right now. So that would that's just kind of my takeaway from all of it, is that there could very well be multiple high-profile trades that the Royals are a part of in adding before the trade deadline. That was my takeaway when I read that. And you know what? I've also read from multiple outlets, ESPN, I think CBS Sports was one. There have been others. They've all said that the Royals are going to be aggressive, that they're going to be aggressive buyers. And you know what? They don't have, number one, the assets. Number two, they don't have the financial wherewithal, I don't think, to be able.
That's what they don't. That may be different.
I don't think they're going to be able to be the Dodgers. I don't think they're going to be able to be the Phillies. No. Like, I don't think they can buy their way like the like those other teams necessarily could. But I do think that they're going to be able to be as aggressive as they possibly can be.
They'll empty the farm. They might be willing to spend. I don't know that the kinds of players, you know, that take a lot of dollars are even out there. Here is the challenge of it right now, because I agree with those people. It is the timing is right. There's not a lot that would jeopardize what you have. The core of this team, the future of this team is called up currently, and you have this window. But you're looking at a situation right now where all of a sudden in the National League, like, none of the divisions feel like they're attainable. So what you have right now in the National League is like 10 teams within reach of the wild card. Now, Washington already told you they're selling. So now you've got the Cubs, the Giants, the Reds, the Pirates, the Diamondbacks, the Padres, the Cardinals, the Mets, the Braves competing for three spots. And if that sounds like too many, the Cubs are only five games back. Okay. Like, there are a ton of teams, and this could all change with over the course of the next 4 days, but it becomes very difficult right now to know A, who you're bidding against in a lot of cases, and B, if any of those teams might all of a sudden have assets you might want. So you got to scout all their guys too, just in case. But I'll tell you this, the advantage that the Royals have right now and the advantage that they have at this trade deadline is that they don't need starting pitching. Now, J.J. Piccolo told us you can never have too much and you could always use depth there. But the reality is, I don't think the Royals are in the market at all for starting pitching. I think, and it goes back to our original, you know, it goes back to our original point. They may end up just, not on accident, but they may find themselves with an opportunity at a reliever that could be a high leverage guy down the road, just because they're like, you know what? We've already gone and we've made a couple that let's just do it all. Rick says this on YouTube, and we see this comment a lot. If they empty their farm system, they'll be back to losing 100 games soon again. I'm gonna ask you this, Rick. They lost 100 games last year. They've lost basically they've been doing that for the last 6 years. What has graduated this year from the farm that has helped them win the games that they're winning right now? Like, who came up and has it? It's Alex Marsh, right? To some degree, and that's it. Nothing else about what they've done has been because the farm system has been helping them this year. That is not what's happened. Their farm system isn't any good. And it's not going to be any good if they don't make any trades. It's just not good. So what's currently there, it's not like it's not a good farm system anyway. So empty. I don't know how much emptying it now, like, who on the farm is set to help this team? They're in a window right now because of the free agents that they brought in and because the players that had already graduated the farm, Bobby Witt Jr., Vinny Pasquantino, Alex Marsh, I guess you could say Cole Reagans, although he was a big leaguer the moment they traded for him. It's not like all of these exciting young players have put the Royals in the position they're in right now. The reason this year is so exciting is because of their abject failure on the farm for the last 5 or 6 years. There's nothing down there that you could see helping this team in the next 2-3 years anyway.
Are you cool?
I mean, that's
with
a little
them?
Aggressive. You, that's a little aggressive.
Like,
I'm sure
are
there
you good
are
with them, like,
players,
moving but, out everybody. Like, are you like Mitchell and Caglione?
You'd like to hold
and
you, oh you no, know, no, so, no like, not Caglione. Caglione may help the team this year. Yeah. He's the type of player that they could call
a little aggressive.
That might
this
be
year?
A little. It might be a little rich, but I'm saying, like, he is an advanced bat. And somebody asked me that. And I don't think he will this year, but Like he could, he's like Wyatt Langford was last year. He could easily get called up to start the year next year and help the team. No, they're not trading him. They're probably not trading Blake Mitchell. Everybody else, I would say, is available.
Mazzucato?
And Blake Mitchell. Yes. Yes, absolutely. Blake Mitchell might even be available. Maybe. But yes. And you look, there has to be an architectural plan on this. If you do this, you've got to tell John Sherman right now, like, hey, if Waka doesn't come back, we're going to have to go find a starting pitcher in the free agent market next year. Like, are we okay with that? Because you're going to have to commit to spending some dollars again this offseason. Those conversations are happening. Like, if they choose to go down this path, it will be a path that helps them win for the next 2 or 3 years. And then they'll have to rebuild their farm system through the draft.
Can I tell you, like, if they're going to, let's say they move somebody like Mitchell, I would be more okay with it if the return is maybe one player that can help them contribute right away, and then maybe two or three minor leaguers that can help you replenish your farm system to an extent. At that point, like, I would be maybe okay with that. Like, you get a little bit of return, so you're not just completely decimating the farm system. You're kind of doing both things at the same time. You're helping currently.
That's what they'll tell you. Helping the future. Why do we bring up Blake Mitchell? Because he's their top prospect. He's the 60th best prospect in baseball. So what can we can focus on the fact that he's their top prospect, but you've got teams with loaded systems that might trade their third or fourth best prospect to get better, who are still more highly rated prospects than Blake Mitchell. So I don't think we can focus so much on the fact that he is the Royals' best prospect as much as what kind of prospect is he overall? What do they envision from him? What does his future look like? It's all on the table. I almost, and understand, I almost never advocate for just pushing it all in like this. But after the last 6 years, I mean, it's just staring at us in the face for this particular organization at this particular time. And I don't think it's a mistake, because what's the worst that can happen? They can do what they've been doing for the last 5 or 6 years. I mean, that's what the alternative is. This opportunity hasn't presented it. It's been once since 2015, one time. I think you got to be aggressive. 869-1240 is the number on the IHOP hotline. We'll get back to some more of this conversation. The scholarship rule that Fitz alluded to is, I got to have time to digest it, but we'll get a little more into exactly what's happened as well. Sports Daily rolling forward on a Thursday. Don't go away.
.975 and 1240 KFH.
Welcome back in, everybody. Sports Daily on a Thursday. Hope everybody is having a great day out there. Prairie Fire Coffee bringing us some great coffee each morning here at KFH. Appreciate their support of the program. This scholarship ruling, I'm trying to get a wrap on, and it's going to take a day or so. So this happened yesterday, and I missed it. But basically, the NCAA is lifting scholarship restrictions. The immediate reaction is this only helps the biggest schools, because now all the scholarships that they couldn't give, that, you know, players might choose to come to Wichita State, for example, would instead choose to go to a bigger school. Wichita State didn't have football, but let's take a lesser sport, for example. You know, I say lesser as far as like a non-revenue crazy sport like football. So let's say it's, I don't know, let's say softball, a team that's had a ton of success at Wichita State. And so Wichita State softball, who has thrived, and they just had a bunch of really nice transfers this week, by the way, like really nice transfers come in, program that's thriving, doing great. Does, you know, do other schools getting more scholarships cost Wichita State the ability to get maybe some of those players? I would really have to talk to some coaches to see if they feel that way. The other part of that is that doesn't really change NIL, right? So is a scholarship at Oklahoma is going to be a bad example here. Trying to think of what a good example would be. As a scholarship, Texas Tech. I think the high school softball player of the year just signed with Texas Tech out of the state of Kansas. So let's use them. And let's take Wichita State, who's a great softball program, and by most accounts, a better softball program than Texas Tech. Would you be more likely as a student athlete to go to that school because they have an extra scholarship they might not have had, or Wichita State? And I think my first reaction might be you'd probably go where the better NIL opportunity is, right? More than the scholarship itself. So I think that's something we have to think about before we go nuts on that, is so much of this right now is being decided by NIL. What gets really interesting to me is the revenue sharing part of it. So let's say, use the same example, and I don't know how the revenue share is going to go, but what if it's an SEC school that can guarantee the athlete more of a revenue share? And I don't think the revenue share extends down all the way to all sports. I think it may be something, and that, again, that's why I need more time with this. I just have to have more conversations. But if it's, you know, let's say it's football. Now, does an athlete, where an NIL opportunity might be similar, have more of an advantage to go to an SEC school because their revenue share is greater? And there are a lot of layers to this.
It all comes down to the earning potential. It'd be like
playing potential still matters.
Playing potential does matter, but also earning potential matters significantly.
Sure does.
Future opportunities matter. If you have a better opportunity to make it to the next level, that's going to matter. Exposure matters. There are so many different factors that play into it. If I'm a player that is maybe borderline, like will I make the NFL? Probably not. Maybe. Then I'm going to take probably the opportunity that's going to guarantee me the most amount of money. If there's no guarantee, I'm going to earn at the next level.
So here's one of the big concerns I would see is in the transfer portal. If you have players being misled more often because there are more spots, if they are promised things that can't be delivered on, basically, because there are more spots and teams just feel like they can collect as much talent as they can and lie to the kids, basically, because they now can offer them through. But here's the other thing to remember. Yeah, they could use up to that many, but if you let's say right now, let's just use round numbers. Let's say you get 50 scholarships right now for the players, and you get 100, and I know it's more than that for football, but let's pretend like it is. The problem you're going to run into there is that's more players to share that revenue. So then the players make a little less. So there is a yin and a yang to this. We'll try to get to the bottom of it. Maybe we need to get somebody in here to help us explain it. But that story is out there. That's what that is.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Odyssey celebrates the back-to-school season, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Hey, fantasy football owners, I'm Matt Harmon.
And what's cracking up, James Coe? Join us on Reception Perception as we dive deep into wide receivers, the position that will make or break your fantasy team.
Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.